With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I have a coach and I tell him all the time, I'm like, I'm going to go to the one-hander. He's like, no, you're not.
Hello, Renee.
Hey, Caitlin.
How are you?
I'm great. You couldn't be bothered to walk over to my apartment, so we're once again doing this on Zoom, but that's okay.
I mean, I'm in between cooking dinner for my family and giving somebody a bubble bath, so unless you want to get involved in either of those activities, stop complaining.
Okay.
Something very big has happened since the last time we checked in. With an incredible, I must say, interview with Venus Williams. Everybody's been talking my ear off about how much they enjoyed your chat with her. So kudos.
Thank you. Well, I mean, it was a pretty good subject that I got to talk to. So I'm glad everybody got to enjoy it. And if you haven't, well, then hurry up.
Yeah, no time like the present. What I am referring to, of course, is the arrival, finally, of issue number 16, Racket issue number 16. And I just want to spend a minute talking about what's in it, because I think, frankly, it's probably our best issue ever. And we got your boy, your fellow Australian, Nick Curious, on the cover, shot by the illustrious Abigail Varney in his home in Canberra for the cover shoot. It was really, really fun to pull together. I know you've had a chance to check it out. Anything standing out to you?
Well, the fact that I think it's a classic that on the cover of Racket magazine, we've got the great Nick Kyrgios, the basketballer. But, you know, I mean, it just shows you, look, Nick started the year great at the Australian Open. I think he pulled off some amazing matches there. He also showed that when we had fans, how he was the fan favorite at the Australian Open. I mean, you couldn't get enough of Nick. We couldn't get enough of Nick. And one of the things that was so disappointing when we had the lockdown for those 5 days is that Nick wasn't going to be able to play in front of people. So, you know, Nick transcends the sport. There's no doubt about it. He brings in a demographic of kids that maybe felt left out. I practiced on a court next to him, for example, in Melbourne when I was with Sam down there. And there was about 15 kids from the school that we were hitting at that turned up to watch him practice, okay? And every time he won a point, I mean, they were cheering and screaming and chanting his name. And I was like, I just looked at Sam, who's like the ultimate professional, and everyone there, and Ash Barty, and it's like all these kids cared about was watching and cheering for Nick Kyrgios. So there's something about him that really transcends the sport, and it goes to a place that, you know, he's bringing young kids into the sport, and that's what we as tennis needs.
You know, it's interesting because when I talk to people who like him, and it's many, many people, they're not necessarily tennis fans. They're fans of other sports. They're basketball fans. They're fans of culture and music and hip hop and sneakers and a lot of the things that Nick himself is into. And I think what's really a missed opportunity for tennis and something that we're very interested in changing is, you know, sometimes he doesn't behave well. Sometimes he is off and being a wanker. And sometimes he's, you know, playing the most brilliant tennis you've ever seen. What I think is so transcendent about him is you can't help but look at him and understand what he's going through, feel connected to the emotional displays, whether they're good or bad. And really he, to me, is a lot more like a basketball player or a professional football player in both British and American ways of using that term. He really makes sense more as an athlete in another sport. And I don't think that that's a critique of tennis, but I do think it's an opportunity for tennis to widen the tent a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Look, I mean, nobody wants Nick to like get his shit together and play, you know, great tennis more than us because of the fact that if he were to start like winning tournaments and really shining as a tennis player, you know, all the other stuff can kind of be left behind because he's an incredible tennis player.
Yeah.
But you got to put the work in, and you've got to do that. And so the next couple of years are really pivotal for him. And, you know, you can get an injury and you can be out. There's a pandemic. He's lost an entire year. So look, I'll be looking forward to him getting back on tour. But the article and the photos and of course the magazine this month are just, as per usual, amazing.
Well, we have some podcast familiars in here. Anne White writes about her incredible story in that all-white bodysuit, her journey from West Virginia to Wimbledon. Your friend and mine, Kat Adams, has a new memoir out. The excerpt Dave, the editor of the magazine, chose to include involved Zena Garrison and Bootsy Collins. And also, I think there's a bit of Prince in there. So it's, you know, per usual, our nice mix of, you know, culture and whatever. Ben Rothenberg plays with Barbies. These Barbies, the photos of Barbies, we had some miniatures. It was the only time I've ever seen Billie Jean King repost one of our pieces of content in the same day that Tyler, the Creator, had something to say about Racquet magazine content. And both of them, of course, had to do with the fact that they were recreated in Barbie form in this issue. And I'm pretty proud of it, to be honest. I didn't anticipate that kind of day happening for Racquet magazine. So not yeah. bad.
No, kudos. It's great. It's fantastic. The photos are awesome. I loved when Billy retweeted the Barbie picture of her. It was awesome.
Well, of course she has her own Barbie. Anyway, for anybody who is getting tired of hearing us talk about this and wants a copy in their very own hands, racquetmag.com, hit subscribe for a whole year's worth, or you can just buy issue 16 at your favorite newsstand. While we're on the subject of Nick Kyrgios, he came up in your very, very great, entertaining and wide-ranging chat with, of course, rock and roll, pop, legend, musician, and now tennis player, Pete Wentz. What a fun interview this was.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, the one thing about when you and I talked about doing this pod in the beginning was like, wouldn't it be fun to interview people that just also love tennis, that are, you know, well known for doing something other than tennis. And so Pete Wentz, you know, put his hand up to do the pod. And we were like, sure. I flew back from Australia. I literally landed in LA and I interviewed him the following day. And he, can I just tell you something? For a guy that's internationally well known, of course, as in the band Fall Out Boy, I won't sing any of the songs so I won't embarrass myself or him. But, but you know, he was absolutely delightful. He was so nice. He was so welcoming. And the first thing I noticed when I walked in the door, Caitlin, was that he had a kind of like zinc on his face, right? Like sunscreen. So I didn't ask anything about it. And I was like, okay, he's been out doing something and protecting, you know, his youthful looks. And after the interview, I said, I have a question for you. Like the zinc, is that what, were you playing golf or tennis? He's like, I was playing tennis. And I was like, oh my God, like this is how into tennis this guy is. And I loved interviewing him. He had all different ideas about the thing that I wanted to get out of him is, Pete, how do we make tennis cool again?
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that he does say is that certain people don't want to be known as tennis players. And I thought that was so interesting because I'm like, this is the problem. Tennis is seen as a country club, rich, white sport. And how do we change that conversation around getting tennis to be cool and taking it to the masters? And Pete Wentz, you know, he gives his ideas and his thoughts. And I thought it was really interesting, but he's great. And what a nice guy.
He had a lot of tennis knowledge in a way that was indicative of not only being a player for a long, long time, but also somebody who was just legit into it. Like his favorite players are obviously like Kyrgios and Shapovalov. Hearing you guys work through that pronunciation was pretty hilarious in particular. But like Sabalenka, like he's got some deep cuts. You know, he likes
the kind of like people that if they want.
Yeah, the rock and roll types. I get it. I love Sabalenka for that reason. She was fearless today, even though she lost in the final to Barty, which made me kind of sad because I love Sabalenka. You know, she's always like redlining she's always redlining. You know, and it either goes really well or really bad. But anyway, this was just a really fun interview to listen to. I think it's going to be a really fun interview for a lot of people to hear. And listen, anybody in LA, when Pete is not playing at his coach's private tennis court, sounds like he's on the public LA tennis courts waiting in line with the rest of you chumps. So say hi, give him a high five, help him work on his one-handed backhand so he could portray Roger Federer in a biopic one day. And, you know, welcome him to the club and spread the word. Because I think, you know, just like Pete says, tennis is actually legit cool. And you know, let's keep it going.
Yeah, we're going downtown.
No, that's not the song. This is embarrassing. Should I edit that out? I mean, this is just, I shouldn't even.
It is the song, but I don't want to sing it.
No, we're going down.
We're going down.
No. Okay. All right. But here's the interview. Here's the interview just to stop Renee from singing. Enjoy. Yay.
All right. Bye, everybody. Thanks.
Well, thanks for joining me for the Racket Magazine podcast.
Yeah, totally.
I didn't know that you were even a tennis player. So
yeah, I own an issue of Racket Magazine.
That's so cool.
Yeah, sure.
I was just talking to I usually do it with my buddy Caitlin, but she's, you know, in New York and I'm here. I just got back from Australia. So,
yeah, totally.
She just makes me do everything on my own.
Yeah.
But it's a great magazine and it's kind of interesting that you like it because it's kind of those... It's the thought process behind racket in general is to make it cool, right?
Totally.
Make tennis cool. And there's a lot of people that wouldn't even know that you played tennis or, you know, that all these other people that are sort of doing other things love tennis. So
totally.
It's cool. I want to know why tennis, like what got you into it?
Well, so I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago and I played at the Centennial Pool where they had like a tennis, you know, indoor tennis courts. I can still, I have really visceral memories of, they had these, nutty bars that you could get from the snack machine there. I remember those. And I remember, the sound because it was, curtains, giant curtains between the courts. And I remember the sound if you smashed your racket on the curtain, it would just, echo through the whole thing. And it smelled a certain way.
Wait a second. Were you the one throwing your racket?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think so. But, more in the, little kid. I wasn't even frustrated at the point because I was, definitely not on a path to, any tennis career. So it was just more let's see how loud this is going to be, you know? And it was, super, pancake volleys or frying pan volleys, you know, just stuff, where not serious, you know what I mean? Not serious at all. And that was kind of that. And then I would play, vacation tennis, you know, which everybody kind of knows is just, again, not serious. Now I see it a lot and I'm like, that's cool. It's fun. I think that with anything that you do, from a hobby to, a real passion... It has to start with, fun, you know what I mean? Or, something that, kind of, tickles your, you know, it has to get, something going. And then maybe 7 years ago, something like that, I was taking my 12-year-old, and he was, you know, I'm not going to do the math, but 5, I guess, at the time. It was this coach that I'd played with, you know, I was it was an on and off thing, you know, I'd start and I'd stop and it would never get past anything, you know, and I started playing with my kid and then he noticed that I wanted to play more and I wanted to play at other people's lessons. And all of a sudden, I had the summer where I
obsessed.
Yeah. The summer where I was fuck it, I'm just going into Continental Grip. I'm going to double fault the entire, and I played with my brother, me and my brother played doubles. And he was it was just when I served, I double faulted, you know what I mean? Because I was trying to hit 2 second serves and I couldn't hit 1 second serve, you know what I mean? So, but I was, it was there where I was, I wanted to get to the point, you're never going to be a professional tennis player anywhere near it. Though, tennis has, an odd thing where when you watch it on TV, there's, moments where you're, I don't know, could I? But then when you get there up close, you're like, oh my God, it's going so fast. The TV doesn't, the TV hides that in a way, you know what I mean?
I agree. I always tell people, if there's a few sports that absolutely don't do justice to the sport, and tennis is 100% that sport, in my opinion.
I think when people are watching Federer on tennis or Federer on TV, they're like, there's a ballet thing to it, which I do think exists. Yep. But you're also not noticing that you're oh, he's taking his backhand four and a half feet in the air, and it's screaming back and forth, and you don't really, because he makes it look so easy that you don't even pick up on, you're no, you couldn't do that at all. And I've had many moments we can get into it, even in Australia, where I'm no, you couldn't do this. But I guess I decided that I wanted to do it. I felt the best I could get to, and this is what I work out with a trainer besides tennis, and he's like I just want you to look cool naked. He's like, if you're strong too, that's great. But, that's just what I want. You know, I was like, this is perfect for me. And so, with tennis, I would love it that if they were, making a move. I was playing a character. I was playing somebody who played professional tennis, college tennis.
Yeah.
they wouldn't have to always cut to a double, cut to a body double every single time.
Yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
every once in a while, you know, like there's someone.
Is this what you're telling me? Is this what you're telling me that when they make a Federer like movie?
Put me in. Oh my God. I really have to work on the one handed backhand. Yikes.
So you got a one handed.
Yeah. No, I don't.
Oh, you don't?
No, I don't. I wish.
Oh, so it's a dream.
It's a dream. And I tell my, like, I have a coach and I tell him all the time, I'm like, I'm going to go to the one-hander. He's like, no, you're not. He's like, that's just not the route for you.
All right. Well, when we play, because I had a one-handed backhand.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. You know,
that was probably my best shot.
Really?
My forehand was, most people would say it was pretty ordinary.
Right.
On its good day.
And your backhand
And I had like, you know, pretty continental sort of semi-Western forehand. It was just like, what the fuck is going on with that?
Right.
But I had a beautiful one hand.
And so was it, did you come over? Was it top?
Yeah, yeah. I had slice and I had a toppy.
So I would assume that also then you would be good volleys, right? Because that lends itself. Because my volleys, I feel like, I'm like, you're kind of like a baseline guy. So like, your volleys kind of suck.
So basically what you're saying is that I'm your ideal coach.
Exactly.
Not only am I going to like get you a one-handed backhand, but the best part of my games were my volleys.
Please,
so,
yeah.
So there you go. You know, that's also part of sort of being a lesbian is that you're a servant volleyer. So that was sort of my thing. And everyone knew at my best, like my match point at the Australian Open when I won my first Grand Slam, the only thing I kept telling myself was, Renee, no matter what happens, get to the fucking net.
Get to the net.
Because if you get to the net, you can make the volley, but you cannot be guaranteed of making a Grand Slam.
Like you don't want to grind back.
No,
not
against Mary Pierce. I was I had no chance. So it's interesting because you said you grew up in the outskirts of Chicago in Wilmette, which is funny because I actually spent 2 years in Chicago.
Oh, right on.
And I had a former girlfriend who I grew up in Wilmette.
So oh, cool.
You probably bumped in. Not on the tennis court, because she was like, that is the last place that she would have ever been.
Got it.
But it's so interesting to me, like, do you think, like, going back to childhood, because you play soccer as well, like you did sort of all athletic stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and you have, like, such an interesting background, because I looked into a few things.
Right.
Dad was, like, this white guy lawyer. Right, your mom was definitely not like that,
right? Yeah.
So you grew up in a biracial family.
Yeah.
And you grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. Do you think if someone had said to you, okay, put your focus into tennis, do you think you could have, like, or is the creative side that took over to go into music?
I would say that,
like, if you went back now, as you now.
Yeah. I don't think that I could have made it in tennis or probably just about any other sport, because I didn't have that complete magical connection or that complete, like, the thing that, like, where you're like, there's the raw talent is there, and if I just, like, carve away at the rest of it, I just didn't have that. Though, like, from reading, you know, Agassi's book or reading anybody's, like, maybe if I had a parent that was just like, this is what we're gonna do and I'm just gonna, like, fire tennis balls at you all day, like, I don't know, maybe like 10,000 hours and that, like, maybe, but I don't know. It's just like, I don't think so. You know what I mean? And if I couldn't do any of it, but it would be like journeyman at best, because I don't think there would be anything special about my, I don't know. That's just like the raw talent wasn't there, unfortunately.
I always think that's so interesting because, like, I've got like tattoo on my arm that says passion, because I just think that whatever you're going to do, you have to have passion for it.
Totally.
So if you look back on it now, because you have passion for tennis, right? Like you want to get that perfect backhand or that whatever. If you'd had that passion back then, do you think it could have been? I mean, as you said, you might not have been like top 10 in the world, but you obviously had a drive for something.
Right.
I mean, I don't want to depress you that you could have been like top 10 in the world.
No, totally. I'm thinking about it and I'm just like, well, the other thing is, so I'll talk to like my coach, you know, and he'll say, oh, I got to say his name, Chris Crabb, because he's like, you never talk about me ever. So there, you're talking
there you
about
go, Chris. Yeah, you're on the.
He is awesome.
Yeah.
But I feel like when you do a thing and it's like you eat, sleep and breathe it, sometimes it loses a little bit of like the, I don't know, joy de vie or what, you know, like you don't like if you were on vacation, would you want to go out and like hit balls or whatever? Like sometimes like but you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, because, but you lived, you know what I mean? And it's like, I like kind of like if the last thing I really want to do is like go jam, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would do it if somebody like was like, let's really do, you know, or a friend of mine, or like my son really want, you know, or whatever. Like, yeah. I would definitely do it, yeah. But it's not something I feel like I really like want to do. And it's like when I talk to like my tennis coach, I'm like, does this guy watch any of the tennis? Probably not. Like, I don't know. Like, and he was telling me that like one of the things that was hard about watching some tennis after playing and playing professionally was that watching the anxiety and the pressure that people were putting on themselves in singles, he was like, it's really hard to watch because it like takes me back to like how I felt.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think actually it's funny that you say that because it was one of the things that sort of, when I stopped playing, it was because I couldn't, the fucking stress of like waking up in the morning, not being able to eat and, you know, just dreading it. I mean, and obviously the great, it's like, I always say, playing professional sports is like legal addiction, right? Because you get that high that you don't get doing anything else. And then all of a sudden it's like when you lose, it's like you want to just kill yourself. You know what I mean? You go into those depression states.
And it's an interesting thing because it's like a thing that doesn't really, because I have some friends that are athletes and tennis, some, I think probably more so like team sports, but like it's an interesting kind of fame where like, it's very, like, I don't ever land at an airport and people are like, you suck. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a thing really. Like, I mean, there's people in like comment sections on the internet, but like fans of my band don't generally think that. And I feel like so much of like professional athletes, it's like, you're as good as like your last thing, you know? Yeah, and then it's like, you know, it was so interesting. We went, me and my 12-year-old went to Indian Wells and we like somehow got in and watched a Federer match. And I don't remember who he was playing, but it was like hearing the emotion when people like are for him fed, like it's like every moment and I'm like, oh my God, this is so much, like it's like these people are like losing a part of themselves and gaining a part of themselves. And it was just, it was something that I'm like, I'm not really wired for that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
I guess the only way to equate it to your life would have been if you'd gone into like some small pub or a small club in, you know, Chicago when you were growing up and everyone's like, where's the other band?
Yeah. And the interesting thing for
us. But that didn't last long.
No. But it was also like, it's just not even, it's more like this. It's like the equivalent of like, you're just on court like 24. So there's just nobody watching you.
Yeah,
you know, you're like, there. You know what I mean? No, like, that's what like, there's just nobody there. There's no one there to boo you. There's just no, you just can't, like, no one's interested, you know?
I've been there.
Yeah.
I was on court 18 many times.
Got it.
So I'm judging by your fact that you've mentioned Roger like three times. He's your favorite player.
I'm all over the place. So I like, I mean, I think that it's hard not to, in the era we're in, be like, they're like, some, like, to me, like three or four of, maybe the greatest ever, you know, Serena,
yeah,
Roger, Nadal.
Yeah.
But I think that I have like a strange, so I also like Dennis Shapovalov. Yeah, how do you say it? Shapovalov.
You're
like
the only one who has a hard time. Brad Gilbert can't say his
name. I can't say any of the names of people that I like. I like him. I like Kyrgios. I don't know if that's a controversial thing to say here.
No, not at all.
You know,
You'll love to hear that.
I like the spirit. And then I like Sabalenka.
Sabalenka.
Yeah, I just like the fire, and I liked how she's like hitting the winners.
Warrior woman.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Very cool. But to me, you need like, or how I think about things is like, so when I got really into tennis, then I was like, what is the like cultural version of tennis that I'm really into? And that was like Agassi and throwback Agassi. And I remembered Agassi back then, but I loved it. And I can get a little too like where people are like, well, why do you just like look? You just like,
well,
you're like wearing the outfits that the guy wears.
You know, the beauty of a podcast is that we can dress how we want and we can look like shit,
right?
So I just want to let everybody know your hair is a little dyed, a little, you know, Agassi like. It's long.
Got it.
So I'm thinking that you're bringing back the 90s.
I mean, I have like the gear that I would wear. So how I approach so many things, like, and I've noticed that like you were into red wine, I'm into like different wine than you were into. I did a little research as well.
Oh wow, okay, good.
But so how I get into
I've moved on to tequila.
No, oh, there you go. Know. Okay, got it.
Red wine gives me a hangover. Today I'm a hungover because my friend made me drink
Or whatever.
Like, She did make me drink way too much red wine, so I'm like tequila soda is my
okay,
thing.
Got it.
So
okay,
anyway,
that makes,
just
yeah,
in
yeah.
case.
It's updated. Got it. I'm updating the info. No, so how I get into things, I think, and this is probably like not the way you're really supposed to, is like I get into something and then I find like what my access point is to it, you know, and get really into it. But at the same time, then there's like this next level that I have where like, which I have, I think, with golf a little bit, like where I buy like a thing or an outfit, but I haven't earned it yet. So I can't, so it hangs in the closet or the club. Like you're not there. You're not good enough. Like if you go out there and do this thing, you're actually not good enough. So you can't have it yet. And you'll earn that.
So you're still in the Kmart clothes.
Oh yeah, totally. But with tennis, I feel like I've come to another point where I'm kind of like, I think it's much cooler to just show up with like two rackets and that's it. Like that's got the guy scary to me. Like the guy that has the full bag and all that, I'm like, yeah, you're probably good and whatever. But the guy that like kind of doesn't care and shows up at the park with like just two rackets, like not, you know, I'm like, this might be like a little terrifying.
So in other words, as an Australian, we would say that you would be the least wanker.
Least wanker. Okay,
yeah,
got
of,
it.
Of
this
group,
is maybe the first
right?
time I've been described as
no,
least wanker.
You're not the wanker. the guy that turns up with the like perfect looking bag and
yeah.
the perfect looking clothes
yeah.
and the shoes that match, who's not very good, he's the wanker.
Got it.
He's the wanker.
I've spent a lot of time. I spent a lot of time in
around
Australia.
Wankers?
Oh. No. Yeah, I'm sure of that as well, honestly. This is probably the first time I've been described as the least wanker in the group, which is good. No, I spent a lot of time in Australia. I really, really enjoy Australia.
Yeah, well, I just got back from there, and it's pretty much COVID-free. And you and I are sitting outside doing the podcast
know,
right now.
So
because
sad. But we'd probably be fine, too, but it's just like, I don't know. Then I'd have to go get tested, and you'd have to go get tested.
Well, I got tested. I've been tested twice in the last 5 days,
so
just so you know.
Yeah,
I'm negative. So
yeah,
if I've turned positive, it's your fault. Okay?
I'm negative as well. So like, if we turn positive, it's like in the couch cushions.
No, we can make out.
There you go. There you go.
So I read the weirdest thing today about you is that your parents worked for Joe Biden, and that's how they met.
Yes.
And that is the craziest thing.
Yes.
So you know there's a tennis court at the White House. So
oh, yeah.
Let's
I actually
try and make this
happen.
That
would be so sick. Yeah, my bandmates and whatever, like they're like, when are we gonna go
to
like,
the White House?
I'm like, dude, we're like in a pandemic. You know what I mean? Like this is like, I think we're like very low on the list right now.
Okay, but you know, there's a tennis court there.
I would love to play. That would be. I have a little bit of a thing where I love to find like odd tennis courts and whatever. Like I know there's one. Is there one in?
There's one. I don't know if I should really tell you this, but
no,
there's
please.
One in the Senate building in D.C.
Oh,
well.
Really?
So, yeah.
Wow. No, I was going to say there's one in, what train station in New York?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so like finding, and there's this one.
There's one in the UN Plaza Hotel as well on the top floor, because when we played
oh,
the
really?
WTA Finals in New York, that's where we used to practice. We'd all stay in that same hotel.
Oh,
there
that's
are.
Cool.
Where do you play here? I mean,
so here,
maybe I shouldn't.
No, that's okay. Like, the guys that already know, like, they already take pictures at the park that I go to, which
yeah.
I play there most of the time. But COVID has made it a little crazy, in a good way, probably, for people who are, for Racket Magazine and for
yeah.
people who sell tennis rackets, because everybody wants to play. Everyone wants to play tennis. Everyone
yeah.
wants to play golf, which is pretty cool. You
yeah.
just got to find the way to keep them going past that. So that's busy a lot. So I play in the Valley, kind of. Everywhere. I play at people's houses. I play, you know, I'm like a kind of a bit of a like tennis rat. I'll just, you know, if someone says like, we need a fourth, I'm like,
I'm there.
Great. I'm like, I'm in my head. I'm always in the car on the way there. I'm like, I hope they're not like way better or way worse than me. That's like my, you know, like my ladder is like, I'm like, let's keep, my ladder is very small. I'm
do
like,
you, do you always like totally like say, because I always tell this to people, if you ever go and play a sport or do anything, like say, oh, I'm about this, but you're actually a little bit better, but you always go low, or do you like, what would you say, like 4-5-5 what are you?
No,
four?
I'm not any no. I would think that I'm a 3-5, I think, probably. I don't actually, yeah, I do think that you gotta undersell, over deliver, whatever that saying
yeah.
is. And I also think that, like, I play with, like, a lot of people that I'm like, this guy, if I saw this guy just walking around, I'd be like, this guy is schlubby. He is not good. And he's, and I'm like, this guy's actually, like, a trained assassin. Like, he's like,
the two
yeah, guy. Yeah, he's in, like, Continental the whole time, but, like, good luck. You know what I mean? Like, good luck, like, getting him to, like, not hit something back.
Who's the best celeb player that you play with?
I play with a lot of people that people probably don't know play tennis, and some of them are probably not, don't really want people to know.
No,
some
come
of them
on.
Do.
Why?
I don't know if everybody does. You know who's really good?
This
who
is
I play
our
with?
Plan, right? This is our plan.
What is the plan?
Our plan, well, not only to play at the White House, but our plan is to make tennis cool. Mm. Like, how do we make tennis cool? Right? I mean,
you gotta let.
I don't want to blow your tires up, but it's pretty freaking cool that you love tennis. I
mean, oh,
who would have
really
thought
nice.
Some guy who's in a freaking huge freaking band
oh,
is
wow,
like
so
obsessed
nice.
With tennis? So,
oh,
like,
so nice.
Who? How do we make
yeah.
it cool?
I mean, we gotta let Kyrgios out a little bit. You know what I mean? I think that thank you, and he's gotta win. We gotta get have him win something. You know what I mean? Because I think kids would think he's really cool.
They already think he's really cool.
Totally.
No, but it's like, insane. What in Australia? I was at practicing, I was coaching Sam Stosur
right.
at this tiny little college in Melbourne because we had to be
right,
separated
right.
from the international players,
yeah,
right, because
totally,
of COVID.
Totally.
And there was about 25 boys, probably around 15, 16, that turned up. They must have been at the school. They came and they started chanting his name on the side of the court. And every time he won a point, they would go bonkers. And I thought to myself, this is what people don't understand. As much as he can be a disaster at times,
right.
and there is, he will agree, his attitude
right.
is not good sometimes
right.
on the tennis court. But this guy brings the young...
Yeah, it's like the chutzpah.
How do we make tennis cool?
Yeah, I mean, I think that helps. I remember I watched this video that's similar of... it's Agassi playing in the 90s on a practice court, and there's a bunch of kids watching him. And it was cool because he was so real with the kids. The kids were like... One of the kids is like, whoa, you killed that serve. Or like, that's... He's like... Yeah, in practice. And I was like, that's pretty cool. You know what I mean? Because that's probably like a little real. You know what I mean? Or whatever. So who do I think that I play with that is a celebrity that... Jeff Probst, who hosts Survivor, is very good.
Wow.
Yeah, he's very good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we play doubles sometimes.
Uh-huh.
And he's very good. He's also very competitive.
Oh.
I'm trying to think of who else is...
Well, there's a couple of people here in L.A. that Kevin McKidd, I don't know who, Kevin from Grey's Anatomy,
yeah.
he loves to play.
Okay.
He plays in Chrissy's event. I get to meet a lot of celebs during Chris Evert's event every year.
Yeah,
and
totally.
So there's a few that come out there that love it.
Oh, that's cool.
That love it.
Yeah.
And they live in L.A. and
totally.
So we've got that's the strategy of how do we grow tennis. And I think during the pandemic, it certainly helped because, as you said, golf and tennis were sort of like...
Yeah, and I think getting people, like I think people get freaked out by sports that they envision being something that they're not, or envision being, like, this country club thing, and, like, making it more like the everyman, and I think that, like, letting people dress cool, making more cool clothes, I thought it was really cool when Pharrell did the U.S. Open gear, and some of the new Prince, like, collabs have been really cool. Like, I think, like, being open to that, you know, like, let's let Dennis Shapovalov, let him rap, you know what I mean? Like, if he's gonna rap, let him rap. I think that, like, letting people know that, like, whatever your entry level is cool. Like, you should come out and have fun. You should play vacation tennis. You should, you know, like, see, but I don't think, like, like, my girlfriend plays tennis, and she didn't grow up playing competitive sports, really. And she, there was something about, like, after she got into it and watched it and played it, and then, like, the bug got in her. And you gotta, like, let that happen to people. And I think too often people are like, oh, I can't do it, or I'm gonna be made fun of, or, like, I can't, like, there's no entry level for me into it. And there really should be, you know what I mean? Like, I think that, like, I get it, because, like, not everyone has a tennis court. I don't have a tennis court. Like, but, like, you could go to the park and play. And
yeah,
like,
that, I mean, that should be the next move. Here.
I know. It's like, I've actually, like, done the math. It's not possible.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Letting people experiment and I think that, like, having these young rad players, like, you know, like, I guess Serena's not, you know, young in the sports world anymore, but I think she's rad, you know what I mean? I think she's, like, really cool, and I think it empowered a bunch of people who didn't think that they, who hadn't thought about tennis, to, like, play tennis, which is awesome, and I think, like, embracing more of that, you know?
Embracing what we don't figure and see as, like, the normal tennis
player. Or, like, the past tennis player, you know? Yeah. I think that's cool.
Well, I have to tell you that I know Venus is a huge fan of Fall Out Boy, so...
Oh, there you go. That's cool. You know, that's pretty awesome.
I did text Serena before this, and I was like, is it you or is it V that's a big fan? She goes, I like him, but she is V. He's,
oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so really cool.
But I think that's something that we could look into as a tennis environment.
So Serena said, like, knew that this podcast interview is happening?
I told her that. Because I wanted to know.
That's so cool.
I knew. I was like, that's
so maybe
such
a... So maybe she had a thought about that today for,
yeah,
like, a second.
Yeah, she did.
That's so cool.
She thought about it today.
That's cool.
Yeah, yeah,
for one second.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
You're not alone in your love of
totally,
you know.
Yeah.
But it's funny because tennis players or athletes always want to be, like, entertainers,
yeah,
and actors,
yeah,
and singers, and singers and actors always want to be athletes. It's just this random thing.
Totally.
Of one. That's why I asked you, like, as a kid, like, if you could go back and, you know, change something.
I'd love to if I could. You know what I mean? Like, maybe this is my only. This is my okay. So here's how we do it, right? I didn't really think about it, but we could do it. This is how we can do
it. All right, we're going to do it.
If we're taking the time machine back, I think we got to put the racket in my left hand. We got to be Nadal's uncle. You know what I mean? We got to go, and that's what we got to do. And we got to just, like, ruin my life for, like, 5 years. But, like, maybe I'm a lefty topspin grinder. And I didn't know it. And I didn't know I had that in my life.
Well, you know? you didn't have the height.
Right.
So, you know.
Okay, yeah. Got that. Don't have that. Don't have the left hand skills.
Schwartzman's like 5'3".
He's big into it, huh?
He's
I didn't know that.
No, the tennis player.
Oh, okay. I thought
you
were saying Jason.
Yeah,
Schwartzman.
He's like, not Jason.
I was like, oh my god.
No. There's a lot of tennis players. There's one guy, Schwartzman. He's like literally like 5'3", I think.
There's
maybe.
So, but where it really has to hurt you is the serve, right? That's and if you have to take a high backhand return.
Yeah, well, if you have a one-hander, you're in trouble. But
right.
There's a lot of players that have one-handers that are not that tall, but, you know, whatever. One thing I also read about you, and I find it so interesting, because when I played, I was a maniac. Like, I had some temper issues and yell at the umpire
right? Got it.
So I got into, like, meditation over the last few years, and I read that you meditate as well, just to deal with, like, the craziness in you. And I think that that's an untapped market in every aspect. Whether it be entertainment or athletics or, you know, especially high performance stuff and being in the moment. Like, how much did that help you going through some rough times?
Oh, I think it's been really, really helpful. And I agree with you. I think it's very untapped. And I think that it's like, could be for almost every person. Like, if you just did, like, 5 or 10 minutes a day, it would probably change your life in some way, I would guess. Yeah, it's super helpful. And it's interesting because, so muscle memory is such an interesting thing. So, because when I'm on stage with the band, I can, like, kind of go into another thought and be pretty great.
Yeah.
Not full-on great. Full-on great, I have to be, like, locked in. I'm in the moment. And tennis, I can't even be pretty great. If I go somewhere else in my brain, I lose it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? All of a sudden, it's like, oh my god, what am I doing? Like, I don't have enough muscle memory. I don't have enough of the hours. Like,
so
where
true.
I can't do it. You know what I mean?
But, like, you know, if you're on stage and something happens where, I don't know, a chord doesn't work or your guitar breaks or somebody...
It's all good.
You know, you just...
It's all good. I can, like... It's not a... Yeah, it's all good. But, like, yeah, tennis, like, woo. Or like the tennis playing in front of people, I'm like, oh, I have no interest in that, really.
Yeah, yeah, you know? It's stressful. Yeah, but that's the same thing, right? It's muscle memory. It's doing something for so long. It's the same with me, like going out and playing. When I was playing professionally, I'd go out in front of it. It would be, it wasn't a packed stadium. Sometimes it was court 18 in front of three people. Yeah, but there were times that I did go out in front of a packed stadium and I was like, I'm prepared. I didn't stress about it. But then if I'm not prepared, like now if I go and play like exhibitions or charity events, I'm like shitting myself and I'm like, what the hell is my problem? No one expects me to be good.
Right.
Like, do you feel like that's the same way in preparing to go on stage? I mean, it's been a while.
It's been a while, the pandemic,
how's that affected?
So our tour in Australia got canceled.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the rest of it, I mean, it's just like hangs in the balance kind of, as far as we haven't made any music really, which I kind of like. I think during the pandemic, I just like was like, I'm going to dive like head on into things that I'm like kind of was interested in, but like, let's just like see if you really like it. Like, got deeper into playing piano, way more into golf, kept like my tennis going, you know, like just like tried to like dive into things that I thought would like help my mind and help my spirit and like, yeah, but as far as like the band, there's enough muscle memory there that we, I think we could always play a show, but like the first one, sometimes you're like, there's sometimes where we're in the middle of a song and we have rehearsed in forever and we're like, whoa, this is getting weird. Like, where are we at? You know what I mean? But it's okay because you can, like, and I'm sure.
Because no one really knows.
Yeah. And, but I'm also sure that you can do like this on the, like what we were just talking about, like how you would be on the tennis court is like, I can like futz it. Like, I can figure it out enough. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's not going to feel that weird. You know what I mean? Yeah, and I feel like it would be cool if my tennis was like that. Like, if like it starts to go sideways and I'm just like, nah, I can just like I remember watching this with the Federer match that we were at in Indian Wells. So it's really windy. He's playing a kid. I can't remember who he's playing. We could look it up or whatever, but he's playing a kid. The kid is like, kind of like beating him up a little bit. And then all of a sudden you just saw like it changed. It was like, Federer starts hitting like only neutral balls. Like in the wind, playing like he stops trying to hit winners.
I love that you took all this in.
I took as much of it in as I could. I think that I must have heard a post game interview, you know, whatever. but all of a sudden it was like, oh my god, am I going to beat Federer? You know what I mean? And like that went, like you could see that in the guy's mind. Like, you can't, like this guy's probably like a hero or probably, you know, whatever. He's like Federer, and like, he's done, and Federer on the other side has done this, like, whatever, 10,000 times, and it fell apart. He, like, got tight, and it got weird, and Federer just kind of played easy breezy.
Yeah, that's, that is the one thing about what being great is about, is that you don't panic in those moments, and you get to a point where you're like, okay, I know this kid thinks that he could possibly win this, so right then and there, I have him.
Right.
Right, because, and then he's such a great, I mean, loser, because if he gets beaten, it's usually because the guys just play better than him.
Totally.
You know, and things like that. So there's no apprehension, like, for you, like, getting back on stage and being together again as a group. And
no.
If it happens, God willing, like, with the pandemic being over, I mean, you guys just, like, riding a bike.
Yeah, there's a little bit, like, every show, right before we go on stage, I'm always like, I think this might be the one where nobody cares. I don't know why, but like, that's the moment. That's what I feel kind of like right before we go on. I'm like, maybe this is the one where they just like, and that must be like some psychological thing in my head or whatever. But yeah, I think it's like riding a bike a little bit. And we've been doing it, the four of us, for so long that it's like in that way.
Don't worry. He's not coughing at my direction.
I turned away. I turned to my side.
No, I find it so fascinating because I love to hear why and what gets people like into their lives. And I just think you find a passion. Like with me with tennis, it was, I felt, and it's funny that you say about, you just have that moment of that magic. And for me, I remember practicing my serve as a kid.
Right.
And I remember the coach put down like a tennis ball cover and said, okay, you got to hit those markers, right? And I remember thinking to myself, well, that's really easy. I can do that. And I think that's the moment that I realized.
Totally. Where you're like, oh, like, I've
got something.
Yeah. Like, I have a connection here. Yeah.
And so like with music for you, was it just like, yeah, this is my thing?
I don't think it ever, I think that it was like a really slow build. Like I just did it and we did it because we loved it. And then like it started building. And it started building, but like we didn't, like the interesting thing about, I guess, art that's different than sports is like, there's not really like the tennis ball cover, you know, like you don't, there's less of like these targets of like, if you win this, you've, you know, yeah, like, yeah. So like, or like, you're not really, like you're ranked, but you're not really ranked. Yeah. You know what I mean? So it's like, it's interesting because it's like less competitive, but somehow like more competitive at times, yeah. You know, or whatever.
Well, it's subjective.
Right? Yeah. It's like, that's this weird thing. About yeah, totally. So someone can be like, it's interesting because like you could, we could really, really debate greatest players, especially if we have certain markers of like what, like this is what makes you the greatest player. Like if it's just like Grand Slam wins in like open era or whatever, like there's, you could just be like, this person is, has the most of those. So it's harder to do that with art.
Yeah.
Like this guy's painting sold for the most, I don't know. Like, or like yeah. This person has the most Grammys. Like, I don't, like, you know, like harder to say.
Have you ever come across like bands or an individual singer where you're like, wow, man, why isn't this person huge?
Yes, totally.
You know,
and usually they're not, no longer a singer. Usually now they're
producing.
An engineer, a producer. Yeah. They are a roadie for a band.
Yeah.
And it's kind of sad to me. But I think that, like, for the most part, we find the universe is open to the things that we want to do, and they've found something else. And, because, like, so much of doing anything that's difficult is, like, it's really difficult, and you got to make it look easy even though it's difficult. Like, you know what I mean? Like Michael Jordan being Michael Jordan was, like, super, like, difficult. You know what I mean? But, like, yeah, I just don't think, and, like, I think that, like, to me, Nadal's a great version of this because he is a grinder. I'm like, yeah. Like every point is not easy. You yeah. know what I mean?
And have you ever seen him practice?
No. Okay. Yeah, well, on video, on YouTube, not really. Yeah, yeah.
You know, you go and watch him practice. But the thing that's, I think would be tough for me in your industry is that if I have a talent and I work really hard, like if I do 3-4 hours a day on the court and I get in the gym and I do everything right and mentally I'm there and I do the work for that. I'm going to be good.
Right.
You just know you're going to be good. Right. If you have the talent, you have the resources, and you get the breaks,
right?
You are going to be good. But in your industry, you could, because I've got a couple of friends in the industry, and I'm thinking, why the fuck is this person not selling 5 Grammys, right? You know, getting 5 Grammys for something.
Mm.
But you got to get the breaks. You got to meet the right people.
Right.
You got to find the right agent or manager or, you know.
But I think that the interesting thing, and this is what's similar to tennis to me, honestly, is that, and it's similar to any sport to me, is that when it's your time at the plate, you have to be ready to hit the home run. So, like, what, the top 100 could beat the top 10 any given day, maybe?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
But, like, when you play them, you have to be ready. Like, you have to be like, I can beat, this is the day where I could win this, you know what I mean? And, like, that's hard. It's hard to, like, when it's your time, or like when you have that moment, it's hard to not like fumble the ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think about that in life in general, like in your friendships and your whatever it is, like when you have the chance, you still have to deliver. You know what I mean? So
So then backing up to you guys, when you had your success, was there a time where that happened where you were like, all right, here's the ball. You got to perform.
Sure. And there was like moments. But more than that, there were moments for us where we had like probably like a bit of a, like a curios, like Agassi, like someone is telling you that you need to be like on this path and you don't think you need to be on this path, but you still need to be on the path to victory. You need to be on a path. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And or you can choose to go on their path. And we always chose to go on our own path. But like, I think when you do choose to do that, or you have the blonde wig or hair or whatever it is, like you gotta have the wins to back it. Like at a certain point, you have to be able to, you know, put up or shut up or whatever. You know what I mean? And so I think we had moments kind of like that, definitely.
Yeah, I just find that so fascinating. I think that's what would be hard in your industry is that, oh my God, you've just got to You've just got to meet the right or get the right breaks.
And there's so many like bands and there's so many actors where I'm like, I don't know why this person's not bigger. But then like lots of times people end up bigger or people end up being big songwriters or you know what I mean? And I'm like, oh, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So
going forward, tennis is, would you say it's the most, like outside of obviously your band and your music and all that, like your biggest passion? Now it's golf a little bit. I actually see a little sunscreen.
This is actually from tennis. This sunscreen is from tennis, not from golf. Golf is an interesting thing because I have three kids. So golf is a, like, you play golf, I guess, right?
I do.
Yeah, you do. I read that. is that it takes so fucking, like, talk about a thing that, like, needs to update some of their stuff. Is like, it takes so fucking long. Like, my kids are like, wait, where are you still my dad? You know, like, I'm like... So, and the thing that about golf that's maddening is, like, it takes that long, and sometimes you're, like, not any better at all. Yeah, no, like, I'm like, you know, with tennis, there's, like, these real results to me, or, like, with tennis, at least now, I can be, like, I know why that happened.
Yeah,
with golf, sometimes, like, the right thing happens, the wrong thing happens, I have no idea. I'm like, why?
Yeah.
And then, like, that, you get that one shot, like, where the ball compresses perfectly, and it goes dead straight and far, and you're,
like,
I love this sport! Like, this is my favorite sport! And you're,
totally.
Like... A second ago, I, like, wanted to kill myself. Like, it just doesn't... Like,
no, a second ago, I wanted that driver to be in the lane.
Right? It's, like, maddening.
Yeah, no, that is true.
I actually played a lot of tennis in Australia.
Where was your favorite place to play? Do you remember?
So, when I went... When we were on tour in Australia, maybe 3 or 4 years.
Well, you would have played the Rod Laver Arena.
Yeah, so
was
we played...
Was that weird for you?
Yeah, oh, it's cool. Super cool. I actually think we might have played, like, the thing next... I don't remember. No, maybe we played I can't remember. But
was it like Hisense? There was a.
I don't really.
Was it
remember.
At the tennis center?
I think it was in the tennis center. The Rod Laver's in
it was
Melbourne,
Margaret,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we were.
Was
in
it outdoor or indoor?
We've done both, honestly.
I mean, you guys are big enough. You could have done like.
I don't know.
The big outdoor.
But someone who was on the Aussie side of the touring production knew somebody in the Australian Open or something that connected me, and so I like played on the court where Federer warmed up, and I played with a couple of like pro women, and it was really interesting for me. Like this was like my real, like, so like I work with the coach and I watch on TV and I've gone to Indian Wells, but this was like the real moment where I was like, like, first of all, like everyone was like, or not everyone, a bunch of people have told me, like women don't hit as much top. Like, women don't, you know. Well, what the fuck? Like, this was, like, that was not the case. You know what I mean? Or, like, maybe their, like, top is being compared to somebody, like Nadal or something. But I was, and it was, like, and it was also the moment, because, like, it was my first time playing stadium. Like, so I was, like, I'll just be able to run shit down. The ball has so much more top than anybody I play, and it's going so much faster. I can't run it down. Like, there's all this space, but I still can't run it down.
Yeah.
And then I took, this is so fucked up because I can't remember who I played with. But she was like, I'll hit you one real serve. So she hit me like some crazy like body serve on the tee or whatever. And I was just trying to get out of the way. Like I like literally like no shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like it was like no chance of returning it. And I was like, I just hope I don't get hit by this. You
oh
know
man,
what I, mean?
I wish I knew who it was. Now, I mean, you might remember, I work with Sam Stosur now, and she like literally is probably the one player that has more top spin on her forehand and has the best all-time kick
serve.
This was
a moment where I was like, we need to like readdress this. Like whoever mentioned this to me, because that was definitely not the case.
I would say across the board, it is true that women don't hit the ball with as much topspin as the men, because, you know, as a kid, women aren't quite as strong in the forearm.
Right.
So they develop a little bit flatter sort of a ball than the guys do, particularly on the backhands, but more so on the forehand, but guys are just that little bit stronger. But
if
it was Sam that you hit with, then I would get it.
Yeah. This was not, I was like, I don't know. We gotta have this conversation again. But it was super cool. And we went on tour. We were in Germany and I played on some red clay, which was
nice.
Probably like the coolest to me, because I'm already trying to like slide into shit. And my coach is like, stop fucking sliding in. You're not a kid. This is like, you know what I mean? And like there, it was really cool. It was.
Yeah. Clay's awesome.
It was so cool. And I like love spin and I love. So like it was really fun.
Well, if you ever get a chance to play in Paris, you got to play the Roland Garros courts, because you haven't played on clay, like perfect clay, until you've hit on the courts there, because it's just heaven.
Totally.
It's just heaven. But I anyway, we're kind of getting to the end of everything, but it's so fun because this is, tennis needs to look at people like you and the sport in general, and we got to get it to the masses more of
totally.
Like cool people.
Totally.
You know, and like stop ignoring the outskirts of, you know, the country club lifestyle.
Totally.
You know, and go and find the kids that have the fucked up Nick Kyrgios attitudes and
yeah.
get them into
make
the sport.
It, like,
and,
make it cool and, you know, interesting and fun. Yeah.
Maybe we can have like a band. You know, it's one thing that Tennis Australia does at the Australian Open. They're constantly having music every day.
Totally.
That plays.
Really
they
cool.
have people there, and then people go to the tennis and then they go to the music. And I think we can work, tennis can work with, you know, music in a better way to make it
and I feel
more
like
accessible
seen,
to everybody.
I feel like I've seen the U.S. Open where it's like the before the U.S. Open,
they do
like some music,
yeah.
and then like, and I remember seeing like Federer out and like Jordan's playing, and I'm like, but why don't we do this like dring it? Because it would be so cool.
Should
if
I
you,
be
like,
your agent right now?
Let's
like,
go.
Let's go. Get you to the U.S. Open.
After you give me my one-handed backhand, we're gonna go.
I'll play on an Arthur Ashe. Get you out there here
got
on
it.
Arthur
okay.
Ashe Stadium.
Got it.
It's,
right.
it's a deal. We'll get it done. I think that's about all we got.
Awesome.
Pete, I'm so happy that you like love tennis so much.
Yeah.
And we're gonna keep going. I'm gonna get you that one hand.
Sweet.
You tell your coach.
All right, right.
Have you
I'm ready.
Slicing,
yeah.
sliding, and like hitting the kick serve. And,
sweet.
And when I turn this machine up, I'm gonna find out who the best player that you
okay.
play with is.
Yeah.
Thanks, man.
And that's it for this episode of the Racquet Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Ruggieri and the team at Acast. Find us at racquetmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.